Okay, so the Gemara in Gittin has this long story about Shlomo, which is really, really weird. It's really weird. But in general, this is one of the things I've been teaching the students or Rechaim, is how to read Agadata. Because the stories in the Gemara are often written either in code or they're written metaphorically. In this Gemara, Rabinovich has a fascinating analysis where he really thinks that it sort of brings together the whole story of Shlomo now that we've really finished it. So this is the story, right? We can look at it in the English just to get the story. The Gemara, you know, the Aramaic's there also, but right. So it's after mentioning the spirit named Korkodaikos on the previous daf, the Gemara relates other matters connected to spirits and demons. So the Gemara then quotes a pasuk in Kohelet where the Pasuk said, "Asiti li sarim sharod v'tanu go bnei adam shida v'shidot." So the Gemara wants to know, what are these things? What are these sharim and sharot and human pleasure, shida and shidot? So the Gemara explains, sharim and sharot, these are types of musical instruments, and human pleasures, these are pools and bathhouses. But shida and shidot, so what does that mean? So here in Babel, in Babylonia, they interpreted these words in the following manner: male demons, shida, and female demons, right? So Sheidatin. And in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, they said that these words are referring to carriages. So the first thing that the Gemara says is that Shlomo, one of the things that he collected in Kohelet were demons, which is strange in and of itself. But then the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says,
what
okay.
What is a demon?
I have no idea. I don't know what a demon is. But the story is about to get weirder, because we're going to get very specific about the demons. You can try to figure out from the story what a demon is. But we'll come back to it. I mean, Rabinovich is going to argue that this is all metaphorical. But just to see, this is a very long story and, well, weird. I don't know what demons are. I have no idea. But this is how it goes. So Rabbi Yochanan says, there were 300 types of demons in these words, in a place called Shechin, but I do not know what the form or nature of the demon itself is. So the master said, here they interpreted male demons and female demons. So the Gemara asks, why was it necessary for Solomon, the author of Kohelet, to have male demons and female demons? The Gemara answers, as written with regard to the building of the temple, for the house, when it was being built, was built of stone, made ready at the quarry, and there was neither hammer, nor axe, nor any tool of iron heard in the house while it was being built. So Solomon said to the sages, how shall I make it so the stone will be precisely cut without using iron? So this is the story they tell little kids. They love this story. The Beit HaMikdash has to be built only Mizbeach has to be built without metal. As we saw, Shlomo extended that to the entire Beit HaMikdash. So he asked, how do you do this? So they said to him, there's a creature called the Shamir, this worm which can cut stones, which Moshe brought and used to cut the stones of the ephod. So Shlomo said to them, where is it found? And so where exactly do you find the Shamir? Okay. So they said, bring a male demon and a female demon and torment them together. It is possible that they know where, and due to the suffering, they will reveal the place to you. This was their plan, was find two demons, a male and female, and if you torture them, you trap them, they will tell you where it is. So Shlomo brought a male demon and a female demon and tormented them together. And they said, we do not know where to find the Shamir, but perhaps Ashmedai, the king of the demons, knows. So Shlomo said to them, where is Ashmedai? Okay, if I need the Shamir, and the only person who knows is the king of the demons, so where do I find this king of the demons? So they said to him, he's on such and such a mountain. He has dug a pit for himself there, and he filled it with water, and covered it with a rock, and sealed it with his seal. And every day he ascends to heaven and studies in the heavenly study hall, and in the Beit Midrash in Shamayim, and he descends to the earth and studies in the earthly study hall. And he comes and checks his seal to ensure that nobody has entered his pit, and then he uncovers it and drinks from the water in the pit. So we have a very scholarly king of demons who learns in the heavenly and earthly Bate Medrash, and he has a water pit where he drinks from, which is sealed. Okay. And then he covers it and seals it again and goes. So Solomon sent for Benayahu ben Yoyada, a member of the royal entourage, and gave him a chain onto which a sacred name of God was carved, and a ring onto it which a sacred name of God was carved, and fleeces of wool and wineskins of wine. So what did Benayahu do? He went and dug a pit lower than the mountain, below the pit dug by Ashmedai, drained the water, and plugged it with the fleeces of wool, so that Ashmedai's pit was emptied. And he dug a pit higher up the mountain, above Ashmedai's pit, and he poured the wine into it, so the wine filled Ashmedai's pit, and he plugged the lower and upper pits that he dug. He climbed up and sat in a tree. When Ashmedai came, he checked his seal, opened the pit, and found it to be filled with wine. He said, "That is written, wine is a mocker, strong drink is riotous, and whoever wallows in it is not wise." Right. So Benaiah drains his water pit, puts wine in it instead, from underneath, so it's still sealed. Ashmedai comes, doesn't think it's been tampered with, thinks it's miraculously turned to wine, but won't drink it because he doesn't drink alcohol, because alcohol makes you do bad things. And the king of the demon is very, very frum, and doesn't want to do anything stupid, so he doesn't drink. Right, this story, it gets quite fantastic. And it just begs you to, right, Ravana Rambam, his rule is whenever you open a Gadata, you look at it. If it's obvious, if it sounds like it obviously happened, so it's probably literal. If it sounds crazy, it's probably allegorical. And if it sounds like it could go either way, so it could go either way. Right, this story, if you ask me, right, is of the allegorical category, but it gets worse. So we have this very frum Talmud Chacham of the King of the Demons who doesn't drink alcohol. Right, and it's written, harlotry wine and new wine takes away the heart. He concluded, I will not drink this wine. But eventually, when he became thirsty, he was unable to resist the wine and he drank. He became intoxicated and fell asleep. Benaiah descended from the tree, came and threw the chain around Ashmedai and enclosed him within it. When Ashmedai awoke, he struggled to remove the chain. Benaiah said to him, "The name of your master, meaning of God, is upon you. The name of your master is upon you. Do not tear the chain. God's name is written on this chain and is forbidden to destroy it." When Benaiah took Ashmedai and came to Yerushalayim, he reached a palm tree and Ashmedai rubbed against it and knocked it down. He reached a house and knocked it down. He reached a small shack belonging to a certain widow. The widow emerged, and she begged him not to knock down the house, so he bent his body away from her to the other side and broke one of his bones. Right, so he's not only is he frum and he doesn't drink and he's Talmud Chacham, but the poor widow asked him not to break his house, so he like contorted himself passing it and broke a bone.
And he has a bone. Demons have a bone.
And he has a bone. Right, he said to him, "That is what it's written, soft speech can break a bone." Ashmedai saw a blind man who was lost on the road, and he brought him to the correct road. He's also a good Samaritan, right? He helps the blind person. He saw a drunk who was lost on the road, and he brought him to the correct road. He saw the joy of a wedding celebration in which they were celebrating, and he cried. He heard a certain man say to a shoemaker, "Make me shoes that will last for 7 years," and he laughed. He saw a certain sorcerer performing magic, and he laughed. When Ashmedai arrived there in Jerusalem, they did not bring him before Solomon until 3 days had passed. On the first day, he said to them, "Why doesn't the king want me to come to him?" They said to him, "He drank too much and was overcome by drink." Ashmedai took a brick and placed it on top of another brick. The servants came and told Solomon what he had done. Solomon interpreted the action and said to them, "This is what he said to you to this illusion. Return and give the king more to drink." The following day, Ashmedai said to them, "Why doesn't the king want me to come to him?" They said to him, "He ate too much and was overcome by food." Ashmedai took the brick off the other brick and placed it on the ground. The servants came and told Solomon what Ashmedai had done. He interpreted Ashmedai's actions and said to them, "This is what he said to you through this illusion. Take his food away from him." At the end of 3 days, Ashmedai came before Solomon. Ashmedai took a reed and measured 4 cubits. And threw it before him. He said to Solomon, "See, when that man, meaning Shlomo, dies, he will have nothing in this world except the 4 cubits of his grave. Now you have conquered the entire world, and yet you're not satisfied until you also conquer me." Solomon said to him, "I need nothing from you. I want to build the temple, and I need the Shamir for this." Ashmedai said to him, "The Shamir was not given to me, but it was given to the angelic minister of the sea." So now it gets weirder, because he was sent by the demons, the king of the demons, and now the frum king of the demons sends him to the ministering angel of the sea, and he only gives it to the wild rooster, also known as the Chifat or the Hupi, who he trusts by the force of his oath to return it. And what does the wild rooster do with it? He brings it to the mountains that are not fit for habitation, and he places the Shamir on the craggy rock, and the mountain splits, and he takes and brings seeds of trees and throws them there, and it becomes fit for habitation. And this is why we interpret the word Duchifat as a cutter of mountains. They investigated and found the nest of the wild rooster in which there were chicks, and he covered its nest with translucent glass. When the rooster came and it wanted to enter the nest but was unable to do so, it went and brought the shamir and placed it on top to crack the glass. Solomon's servants threw a clump of dirt at the rooster, and the rooster knocked over the shamir. The man took it, and the wild rooster went and strangled itself over the fact that it had not kept its oath by not returning the shamir. Right, so now we've gone from Shlomo trapping demons to contacting the king of the demons, who's a Talmud Chacham and a good Samaritan, who sends him to the angel of the sea, who protects a flying rooster, which is also not possible. Okay, whatever, Hoopy, whatever it is, to protect the magic the magic worm. He takes the worm, and now we have the chicken committing suicide, right? And later, Binayahu says to Ashmedai, what is the reason that when you saw the blind man who was lost on the road, you brought him to the correct road? Ashmedai said to him, they proclaim about him in the heaven that he's a completely righteous man. Anyone who does good for his soul shall merit to enter the world to come, right? So Ashmedai is very worried about his Olam Haba. He says, well, he's a big tzaddik, so I helped the blind man. So what's the reason that when you saw the drunk man who was lost on the road, you brought him to the correct road? Ashmedai said to him, they proclaim about him in heaven that he's a completely wicked man. And I did good for his soul that he will consume his reward in this world and not have any reward in the world to come. Binayahu continued and asked him, what's the reason when you saw that joy of the wedding you cried? Ashmedai said to him, I knew that his man will die within 30 days and his wife will be required to wait for the Yavam, or the husband's brother who's a minor, so until he could do Yibum. So Ashmedai also has a soft spot for the poor Almana who's going to be stuck. And then he asked, what's the reason you laughed when the man said, the shoemaker, make me shoes that will last for 7 years. So he said, because he doesn't have 7 days to live, what does he need shoes for 7 years? And then what's the reason that you laughed at the sorcerer perform magic? He said, because he was sitting on the king's treasury, let him use his magic to know what is buried underneath him. And this story keeps going on. We'll come back to it. But even just here, right, like you can see, it still goes on for another page. This story, right, you read it, and it just begs you to interpret it. Right, it is wild, it is odd. So Rabinovich takes this whole story, and we'll see the rest of it, but let's start analyzing it, and argues that this story is really Chazal's interpretation, summary, and critique of Shlomo from the beginning to the end. So he starts really with the people that he meets on the road. He starts with the people that he meets on the road. So, well, actually, not the people he meets on the road. His travel on the road, right? So as he was starting to travel on the road, the first thing that he did was he came to a tree, and he, you know, rubbed against the tree, and he knocked down the tree. So he said, well, what does that mean, right? What could it mean that Ashmedai rubbed on the tree? So he said, in general, big trees are metaphorical in Chazal for great people, people who try to be king. And he said, well, if you open up Shlomo, what's the first thing he does that makes him king, that solidifies his kingship? The first thing that he does is he kills Adoniyahu, right? Because Adoniyahu had rebelled against him and tried to be king, and he knocks down Adoniyahu. But who does he send? He sends Binayahu ben Yehoyada, right, the person who's now escorting Ashmedai. And then he said, the second thing that he does is he knocks down a house. Well, what's the second thing Shlomo does? The second thing Shlomo does is he fires Evyatar HaKohen. But if you look at the description in the Torah, in the Navi, of destroying, of firing Evyatar, the pasuk says, "Vaygare Shlomo et Evyatar miyot kohen laHashem, lemale et dvar Hashem asher diber al beit Eli b'shilo." Right, the kahuna is a bayit, is a house. Right, it's considered a household. They passed on. And the third thing he does is, the next thing that Shlomo does is that he gets rid of Yoav and Shimi ben Gera. Which he, you know, was really a fulfillment of what David had told him, and then he marries Bat Paro. Now he notes that as you continue in the story, right? What does we'll skip here for a second, right? He passes by the house of an almana, right? This Ashmedai passes by the house of almana, and as he passes by the house of the almana comes out and begs him, don't knock down my house. And Shlomo tries to, Ashmedai rather.
Wasn't it a widow?
What? A widow, right? Yeah. And Ashmedai contorts himself, tries to be nice to the widow, pulls himself away, and ends up breaking a bone. So what does that represent? So Rabinovich said, well, wait a second. Why, right? How does Shlomo's downfall happen? Right, the last person we met last week is Yeravam, Ben Ha'almana. Right? Yeravam is the son of the Almana. And what does Shlomo do? So Yeravam is an upstart, and Shlomo sees that, and Shlomo hires him. Right? The way he tries to get rid of him is to be nice to him. He brings him in to his cabinet, and he puts him in charge of Ephraim. He puts him in charge of his shevet. But that attempt at being nice, at this upstart, Yeravam, is what gives him the in to the government. Right? So he said, well, this is a mashal, that Shlomo was trying to be nice to the Ben Almana, but by trying to be nice, he actually ended up breaking himself. That was the beginning of his downfall. So Rabinovich looks at this story and says that these stories, that Ashmedai on his path to Yerushalayim, his path to the king, he first faces a tree which he knocks down. Then he faces a bayit, right? Which he says is Adoniyahu, and then Evyatar. Right? And then his eventual downfall, the one that actually hurts him, is when he tries to be nice to an almana, or the ben almana, in the case of Shlomo. So Rabinovich suggests that this is all a mashal for Shlomo, but then he points out, and this is really what drives the whole story, and I think this is his main insight, which is the key, Ashmedai in the story is Shlomo. But that makes sense, because Shlomo is somebody who has, you know, the way we would talk about it in English, right? Everyone has their demons. The Gemara is personifying Shlomo's demons, right? Shlomo is a good king with imperfections. But you think about Ashmedai as being described, he's not being described as the classic king of the demons, evil, right? This is someone who wants to help. He wants to help. He's trying. He does certain things right. He tries to help out this almana. He tries to help out the blind person on the way. But at the end of the day, he's the king of the demons. And Rabinovich claims that what Chazal are doing here is pulling out Shlomo's sublimated inner demons, his Yitzrei Hara, that we don't really see in full blast till the end of the story, and telling you that they existed from the beginning, which is something we sort of
saw. What happened to the shoemaker in the wedding?
So he continues. Well, okay. You know, let's continue in the story, because the next part of the story is where you really see how this is Shlomo. Right? Up till here, this is a bit of speculation. But after this, it becomes even clearer, and we'll come back to those in a little bit. But if you continue in the story, so finally, Ashmedai meets Shlomo. Right, so Shlomo keeps him until the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Now remember, the whole story here starts off that Shlomo ends up facing his demon, literally, because he wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash. And this was all in pursuit of a good thing, but in the process of building a good thing, he created a lot of problems. He brought the demon into his life, which is something we saw about Shlomo, that he built the Beit HaMikdash, which was great, but that was the beginning of his alliance with Tzor. And to get the political power and peace to have the Beit HaMikdash, he marries Bat Paro. And this was all part of his story. So then the Gemara gets even more explicit. So one day he stood with Ashmedai alone. And Shlomo and Ashmedai are alone. He said to Ashmedai, it is written, for him like the lofty horns of the wild ox. And the sages say an explanation of the verse, like the lofty horns. These are the ministering angels. The wild ox, these are the demons. In what way are you greater than us? Right? He said to Ashmedai, in what way are demons greater than human beings? So Ashmedai said to him, take the chain engraved with God's name off of me, and give me your ring with God's name engraved on it, and I'll show you my strength. Meaning, right now I'm controlled because the name of God is on me. Take the name of God off of me, and I'll show you what I can do, which is, right, very symbolic of what happens with Shlomo. Right? At some point, he starts to stray after Avodah Zarah, and suddenly you see a different side of Shlomo. So Shlomo takes the chain off of him, and he gives him his ring. Ashmedai swallowed the ring and grew until he placed one ring in the heaven and one wing on the earth. He threw Solomon a distance of 400 parasangs, meaning parsaot. With regard to that moment, Solomon said, right, Ma'itron la'adam mechol amalo tachar ha'shemesh, right, what profit is there a person through all this toil under the sun? When Solomon was deposed from the throne, Ashmedai took his place. With regard to the verse, and this was my portion from all of my toil, the Gemara asks, what is the meaning of the expression? And this expression is always an allusion to one item that is actually in his hand and can be shown. Rav and Shmuel disagree with regard to the meaning of this phrase. One said this is referring to Shlomo's staff that remained in his hand, and one said this is referring to his cloak. So Shlomo circulated from door to door collecting charity, and wherever he arrived, he would say, Ani Kohelet Hayiti Melech. Right, this is all building. Hayiti Melech, I was once king. But if you remember, what happened in Perek Yud Aleph? Right, Shlomo is still king, but what does the Navi switch to call him? Nasi. Right, he's demoted. He never actually loses king, but now Chazal are making a drasha. Why was he in the past king? So when he finally arrived at the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem, the sages asked him, now an imbecile does not fixate on one matter all the time. So what is this matter? Right, they say, normally a crazy person babbles different things. Right, one day he's the king, one day he's, you know, the Messiah, one day he's a fish. But this guy, he seems totally normal. The only claim he keeps making is that he is Shlomo. So they wondered, maybe there was truth. So they said to Benayahu, they asked Benayahu, does the king require you to be with him? Meaning, Benayahu represents the Sanhedrin. Has he ever come to you to ask you for advice? And Benayahu said to them, no. They sent to the queens, and they asked, does the king come to be with you? The queen sent a response, yes, he comes. Then they sent a request to the queens, check his feet to see if they're human feet. The queen sent a response to his sages, he always comes in socks, and it's not possible to see his feet, because demons have different feet. Okay. But the queens continued discussing the king's behavior and his demands of them. Namely, the queens to engage in sexual intercourse when they are menstruating. And he also demands that Bathsheba, his mother, engage in sexual intercourse with him. Once the Sanhedrin heard this, they understood that he was an imposter and not actually Shlomo. So the story ends with, or then they brought Shlomo, gave him his ring and the chain on which the name of God was carved. When Shlomo entered, Ashmedai saw him and fled. So Gemara, after the story, tells you that one day Ashmedai tricks Shlomo and actually becomes king. And what are the crimes that they ascribe to the demon king Ashmedai? Two things: he's led astray by sexuality, and he doesn't ask
the women that he has,
his thousand wives, and he doesn't ask advice. Right? He knows everything, right? Which is exactly what Shlomo did. So you look at the story, and Rabbi Rabinovich argues that this, as you go through the story, this is what the Gemara is doing. It is telling you basically that eventually Shlomo, who started to be Shlomo, was eventually taken over by the demon king, not Ashmedai. But Shlomo had inner demons who eventually became who he was on the throne. He was someone who was led astray because he was too smart for his own good. He was someone who was led astray because he was too involved in sexuality, in things that he shouldn't have been. And you look at other Gemara, that's exactly what they say. We've talked about these Gemaras before, that the Gemara said, why did he sin? Because he thought, the Torah said, don't have too many wives, don't have too much money, don't have too many horses, because it'll lead you astray. But I'm smart enough, nothing can lead me astray. And that's why he was led astray. So the Gemara says, yeah, he never asked advice from Benayahu, from the Sanhedrin. He stopped asking advice. He thought he could control his passions, but he couldn't. And there are even Midrashim that explicitly, other Midrashim that actually say, yeah, he used to sleep with his own wives when they were Nidahs. Right, when they were Nida, because the Midrashim actually ascribed that, you know, lustfulness to Shlomo. That not only did he have so many wives, but he was just caught up in passion. And he goes through different elements of the story. I'll skip around to a few. Right, we did the Almanah. So he said, okay, well, what about the blind person on the way? Right, what is this blind?
Figure it out. Who was the blind person? And it was the blind person.
Well, let's give some clues here, right?
So Shlomo
is Ashmedai, right? That's the assumption working here, that he's Ashmedai. But even when he's Ashmedai, the Gemara says that Ashmedai is good. This isn't your classic king of the demons. He has good in him, right? He's trying to lead the blind
to the right path.
Is it Bnei Yisrael?
Well,
who are always going off the wrong path, anyways?
Well, maybe. Right, but what? Well, let's try this. What does blind people mean in Torah, in Chazal's vision of the Torah? What is a blind person baderech?
An unlearned.
Yeah, it's someone who's going to sin. Lifnei iver lo titein michshol. Right, Chazal's image of someone who's going to sin, if you turn him away from sin, is the opposite of lifnei iver. But he said, think about what Shlomo did. Right, Shlomo is known for Right, to quote the pasuk, "Vayvo mikol ha'amim lishmoa et chachmat Shlomo me'ed kol malchei ha'aretz asher shemor chachmato." He's known for not just spreading Torah to the Jews, but to the whole world, to idolaters from far-flung countries. Shlomo manages to bring them back. He does really good things. He manages to do that. And he says, and then he said, what did Benayahu ask him? Benayahu said, why did you do that? Why did you bring the Iver back to the path? So he tells him, because in heaven, they say he's a tzaddik gamor, and anyone who can bring him back will have a chilek in Olam Haba. But he points out, if you look in Yeshayahu Perek Membet, let me get the pasuk of Yeshayahu. And this is what you were saying, Yeshayahu. Second. Yeshayahu, Perek Membet, pasuk Yotet. Membet, pasuk Yotet. Here we go. Mi iver ki im avdi. Who is so blind as my servant? So deaf as the messenger I send? Who is so blind as the chosen one? So blind as the servant of the Lord? Seeing many things, he gives no heed. With ears open, he hears nothing. And God, the Lord, desires his servant's vindication, that he may magnify and glorify his teachings. The Iver is both Bnei Israel and the nations of the world. And Shlomo, if nothing else, did try to do that. He brought the Iver, right? You can't take away what he did from him. And then he says, okay, you brought the drunk person back. So who's the drunk person? And who is this drunk person? So here, the answer, he argues, is not in a pasuk, but in a midrash. Because midrashim play off of each other. Right? The Radbaz notes this in a tshuva, that midrashim play off each other. You have to know the code by knowing other midrash. So listen to this midrash. He says, okay.
Can you figure it out alone or no?
You could try. But this is a Gemara. You'd have to really know this. A Gemara earlier in Sanhedrin says as follows. Shlomo's mother...
What? I just finished Sanhedrin.
So Ayin Amud Bet. So it's the eighth barak. So the Gemara there tells a story that Shlomo's mother comes and gives him Musar. Shlomo's mother comes and gives him a rebuke. And he says to him, Malacha isom milachim shishotin yayin amishtakrim. Why do you hang out with all the other kings who'd spend their time getting drunk? So, the right shikor in the Gemara assumes that that's what the other kings do. They get drunk, they're free. But what's Shlomo been doing during his malchus? He's been fraternizing with all the other kings. He has 1,000 wives from the other kingdoms. And the Gemara says that that was one of his downfalls. And another midrash, which we mentioned, was that right, the night of... One midrash even says that the night that he married Bat Paro... Right, he was the same day as Binyan Beit HaMikdash, and he was late because he drank too much at his wedding and overslept. Right, the Gemara thinks that alcohol, right, and where do they get that? How do they know he was into alcohol? Because of Kohelet, where he talks about Tarti Bilibi Limshoch Bayayin Ed Bisari, because he talks about the fact that he ate a tremendous amount and he drank a phenomenal amount. But then Rabinovich pulls something very interesting, which is, on the one hand, you would think that that would mean that he drank, right? But that's not actually Meduyak. And this was something I didn't notice. If you remember earlier in the Prakim, when it describes the feasts of Shlomo every day, the millions of pounds of bread and meat, it actually never mentions wine. It doesn't mention wine. And he notes that at the beginning, Shlomo clearly didn't have wine. And, you know, if... You're going out of your way to describe the wealth, and you don't describe wine. It must be that he wasn't into wine. He was into parties, but not wine, not alcohol. And he said, where is that in the story here? At the beginning, Ashmedai avoids alcohol. Even the king of the demons, right, won't have the wine in the pit. Right? Later on, right, he gets drunk, and that leads him astray, and that traps him. But at the beginning, he didn't. He may have been the king of demon in potential, but he's still the Talmud Chacham in heaven and earth who won't drink the wine. So then he says, okay, then he meets the wedding. And then he meets the shoemaker. So he said, okay, well, what is this? Right? What is this wedding that he's crying about? Right? He sees the wedding and he says that...
That's the Beit HaMikdash.
Exactly. Right? It's the Beit HaMikdash. Right, and he said
it's going to be destroyed because he said he wanted it for 7 years and it's going to be only for 7 days, and he knows that the Beit HaMikdash.
Exactly, and he notes that Chazal told you this because Chazal say, and this was the Midrash has mentioned in Chazal's mind, what happened the same day as building the Beit HaMikdash? He married Bat Paro, right? It was the wedding that led to death. Right, the wedding came with death built into it, and he said, "Yeah, that was the Beit HaMikdash because he married Bat Paro, and that leads to, right, that leads to death." And then what about this these shoes? this shoemaker, where he thinks he's going to be around for 7 years, chariots. And he's going to die. What?
The chariots and the horses.
So I was actually thinking that, right, that it might be that, right, the runners before Adon Eliyahu, right? Mm-hmm. You have all these people who take off their shoes. Rabinovich, which I think might still be true, Rabinovich points to something else, is actually that he thinks it refers to Yoav, because Yoav is described multiple times as his accomplishments with his shoes. With his ability to run quickly, right? That he, you know, and he said he cuts off the shoemaker right at the beginning, right? Yoav thinks he's going to be in power for so long, and Shlomo finds a way of killing him at the beginning of his monarchy. This person who can run and be the military leader, and he says shoes in general represent long term accomplishments, right? That in the time of Chazal, because it was allowed you to travel, right? Because you couldn't walk on tough terrain unless you had shoes. Military people had good shoes, and that's why Yoav's shoes get mentioned over and over again. So that's his suggestion, but it could be also the runners before Adon Eliyahu or something like that. And then the kicker for him is the last person he meets. Right, he meets the magician, and he starts cracking up when he sees the magician. And Benayahu asked him, what's so funny about the magician? And he says, because he didn't see the treasure buried under the Beit HaMikdash. Right? He doesn't see the treasure buried right there. And he says, well, that's Chazal really asking the question, what does he need with all this stuff? What does he need with Shedim? Right? What does he need with all the everything he's doing? He has a treasure buried there under the Beit HaMikdash, right? He's involved in so many other things. He has the treasure under him and he doesn't see it. He gets caught up in all these other things. And he's right enchanted, as it were, by other things. And that's really his downfall. And then he continues. And he talks about the Ashmodai that he learns, right? He learns Torah in heaven and in earth. He's this brilliant person. He said, "How can you miss that?" As talking about Shlomo, this person who masters Torah in heaven and earth, was described as knowing more than anybody else. And then he says, "Well, how do you catch someone who's that smart? A little bit of alcohol." Right? A little bit of alcohol, it doesn't matter how smart you are, a little bit of desire, and even this person who has all the heavenly wisdom is going to be caught. And then Rabinovich says, you know what really confuses me about this whole story? Why don't you just tell me all this? So what is all of this? Why are you writing this long, extended...
Not to embarrass him.
So it could be not to embarrass him, but he... thinks that this is the ultimate irony that the Gemara is pulling for Shlomo. Because what is Shlomo known for? But specifically what? Both in Malchut Shva and in Mishlei. Mishalim and Chidot. Right? Riddles, right? Mm-hmm. Riddles and parables. Right? That's what Shlomo's wisdom is that he can capture wisdom behind hidden things. And he thinks this is the Gemara in its irony. It's writing an extended mashal and chida to critique the master of all mishalim. right? Because that's what he says about me. These are Difrei Mishlei. I know, I can tell you a mashal that will teach you wisdom. So Chazal come and they say, good, well, I'll write you a mashal that will describe your entire life from beginning to end that you'll have to decipher. And you remember, that was the Midrash of Malkut Shvah, right? She asked him, this mashal, that mashal, interpret it. Well, Chazal are asking you to be Shlomo. Is be Shlomo to understand what went wrong in Shlomo's life. And that's why, which is, I think, a very clever, very clever, very, very clever argument. And he says, and if you want to see some of the, you know, some of this, he said, it starts with Ashmedai getting drunk. But remember, in the middle of the story, he comes to meet Shlomo, and each day he says, why isn't Shlomo there? And one day they say, because he's drunk. And one day they say, because he ate too much. Right? The Gemara is already hinting to you that it's not Ashmedai who's drunk, it's Shlomo who's drunk. It's not Ashmedai who desires physical pleasure, it's Shlomo. Because when Ashmedai wants to see Shlomo, Shlomo's too busy, as the servants tell him. They're forcing you to see that this is, that the line is blurring between Ashmedai and Shlomo until Ashmedai becomes king. And then he comes in, and Ashmedai says to Shlomo, eventually you're going to die and all you're going to have is the grave. Right, that should be the greatest reminder that you're nothing in the end. But Rabinovich said, this is not random. That's a quote. And Ashmedai is quoting Shlomo himself, which is, Vinei Hevel, right, I call Hevel Ruruach, Vein Kol Adasham, this is Kohelet. Is that no matter how great you are, Ani Kohelet, Ayiti Melech Yerushalayim, but it's all worth nothing because you're all going to die. Right? The death of the Chacham is the same as the death of the Ksil. He said, who's the person who wrote the book of Musar that teaches you that no matter how rich you are and how powerful you are, Sof Tavara Kol Nishmael Elokim, Ravid Matav Shemor Kizek Kol Adam, that you're going to die and the only thing that matters is to do the right thing? Shlomo, but Shlomo didn't listen to his own advice, as Chazal say it. And Ashmedai, even the demon within him, is warning Shlomo and he doesn't listen. Instead, Shlomo challenges fate. And he says, what makes you better than me? And he says, let me show you. And he gives him his crown, and he gives him his ring, and he lets him be king. Right? And Shlomo is thrown out. And he notes that underlying the whole story is that, remember, the whole story happens because he's looking for the Shamir. You think that it was all good because he was looking for the Beit HaMikdash? It was. But this was happening during that. Remember, that's what we said since the beginning, that everything looked great because Shlomo was doing good things and building the Beit HaMikdash. But while he was building the Beit HaMikdash, he was looking for the Shamir, Ashmedai was getting closer and closer to the palace because of the Beit HaMikdash. It was simultaneously dangerous. He was doing good things, but Ashmedai was sneaking in. Right? Chazal are telling you the story. Yeah, he was building the Beit HaMikdash, but he was bringing the devil into his house as he was building the Beit HaMikdash. And part of building the HaMikdash, the wealth, the political power and peace, while it was necessary for the Beit HaMikdash, it also brought Ashmedai into his house or into his soul. And then he notes that the Gemara ends. Two points, right? Two last points here. Is that the conversation, right? I mean, it goes on detail for detail, but he said the conversation between Ashmedai and Shlomo is amazing. Because Ashmedai says to Shlomo, you're not so great. You've conquered the whole world, but you haven't conquered me. Right? That is very Navi. Right? Which is, Al yitalel chacham b'chachmato, v'al yitalel ashir b'ashro, or in the Valley Talel Gibor Bigvurato, Ki in Bezot Yadel Midalel, Haskel Viado Oti, the only thing worth knowing is me, or in the language of the Mishnah, is Ezu Gibor, Koveshet Yitzro. Ashmedai turns to Shlomo and says, it's very easy, you've conquered the whole world. The only thing you haven't conquered is the demon. Right? The demon inside of you, that's the only thing you can't. And Shlomo's like, please. Right? I don't need to conquer you. All I need to do is build the Beit HaMikdash. That's what he says to Ashmedai. I'm not here to conquer the demon. I have no interest in conquering the demon. I just want to build the Beit HaMikdash. He had no interest in conquering his demons as long as he could build the Beit HaMikdash. But if you build the Beit HaMikdash without conquering the demons, then it'll all come tumbling down because the demon will take over. And then the last line in the Gemara, and this is what we haven't looked at, but this is what Rav and Shmuel then all disagree, have a final disagreement. What did they say? Okay, so they brought Shlomo, they gave him his ring, right? So, fine. Even so, even though Ashmedai fled, Shlomo was fearful of him. And this is what it's written. Behold the bed of Shlomo, surrounded by 60 strong men from the warriors of Israel, all of them holding swords and trained in war, each man with his sword and his thigh from fear in the nights. Rav and Shmuel disagreed with regard to the story of Shlomo. One said he was king, and afterwards he became a commoner and never returned to his position as king. And one said he was king, and became a commoner and a king, and he ultimately returned to his throne and defeated Ashmedai. Right? They argued, did the story end well or not? Did he ever do tshuva? Right? Did he ever come back to being king? So, on the one hand, right, we don't know. It never tells us that he does. But on the other hand, right, what's his final book? Well, Chazal argue if his final book is Kohelet or not. If his final book is Kohelet, then it's Hayiti Melech Yerushalayim and Tarti Bilivi L'Shoch Bayim Esbari. And I was involved in sexuality, and I was involved in feasting, and I was involved in all these things. And after all of that, and all the mistakes I made, Sof Tavara Kol Nishmat Elim Yerav Mitzvotav Shimor Kizek Kol Adam. In the end, I came back. Or not. Right? Did Shlomo? We don't know. Right? So Rabinovich says this whole Gemara, detail for detail, is Chazal writing a mashal to the king of the mashals, right? The king of Mishlei, the person, the master of Chida v'Chidot, who could figure out all the riddles, and is writing him a Musar Shmuz, and is telling him that you want to understand his life. His whole life, at some level, he was great. Right? His life really was about building the Beit HaMikdash. It was. Right? That was part of his life. There's no denying that everything in the end came down to the Beit HaMikdash. And he was a big Talmud Chacham. He knew what was going on in heavens. He knew what was going on the earth. And he brought people back. He brought the blind back to the Derech. He did great things in his life. He did. But as he was building the Beit HaMikdash, and as he was getting the power to build the Beit HaMikdash, he was bringing the demon into his house. At the beginning, the demon doesn't drink the wine. At the end, the demon is drunk and it's caught. And then Shlomo is the one who's drinking the wine. And Shlomo is the one who's overeating. And eventually Shlomo challenges Ashmedai and says, what's so great about you? He says, well, let me show you. And Ashmedai becomes king and Shlomo is kicked out. And the person who looks like Shlomo but is really the demon is the king. And that Shlomo, he's the same Shlomo. He's still trying to bring people back. He still has the Beit HaMikdash, but he starts to be led astray by his thousand idolatrous wives. And Chazal are trying to show you the complexity of his character, that he's this person who is simultaneously Shlomo and Ashmedai. He is a great king, but he's this demon. He has this demon inside of him, which is always fighting with him throughout his life. And in the beginning, he prevails. In the beginning, he's in control of Ashmedai. But then he eventually becomes Ashmedai. His inner demons come out and they become king. And you know, all these little stories sort of hint at it, right? The Yeravam with the Ben Almanah and all of that. But then the Gemara leaves you at the end with this powerful open question, which is, okay, well, after Shlomo's great success in building the Beit HaMikdash and then all his failures, does he ever come back? So Rav says, yes. Shmuel says, no, or whatever, or the other way around. Rav says, no, one says yes, one says no. We don't know. And what Chazal are doing is just going line by line in Shlomo's life and saying, this is who he was. He's a complex character. He's not a bad character. And that's what we've noticed from the beginning. He's not bad. He's also not perfect. He is complicated. He does great things. Just like, ironically, this king of the demons doesn't sound like a demon. He's bringing people back. He's helping the blind, and he's helping the drunk, and he's helping all those people. He's saying, yeah, he's a great person. He does good things, undeniable. But he's complicated. He's still a demonic king. He still has that in him. And eventually that takes over. We know that. And then they ask, okay, well, is that the whole story or not? Does it end with him not really a king, which is what it sounds like in Yud Aleph, in Malachim, that he is demoted to Nasi, right? He's still king, but he's not really who he used to be. Or does he come back, right? Is Kohelet the evidence that he eventually did tshuva? It was too late. It was too late to save the kingdom. But on a personal level, did he ever come back? And Chazal are trying to force you to grapple with the question through these Mishalim, not through telling it to you, but through hinting at it. I put one more thing here. That's what did I put here? Yeah, and he points out that if you want to really summarize the complexity of Shlomo in Nehemiah Perek Yud Gimel, this is what Nehemiah tells the Jewish people who've intermarried. He says, "Va'arivimam, right? I censure them, va'akalim, and I curse the people who are intermarried. Va'akem mahem, and Hashem em ratem ashbeim be'elohim, im titnu v'neichem, v'notichem v'neihem, v'tizu v'notichem v'neihem v'lachem." He said, I adjured them by God, don't give your daughters in marriage to their sons, or take their daughters for your sons or yourselves. Why? Why is it so bad to start intermarrying? He says, "Halo al ilach hatash Shlomo melech Yisrael." Because this is what King Shlomo did. There was nobody like Shlomo. He was beloved to God. God made him king of all of Israel. And even he was led astray. And you would do this, and you would intermarry? Says Nehemiah, writing hundreds of years later, sums up the complexity of Shlomo's character in one line. He was great. He was beloved by God. He was brilliant. He was king over all of Israel. But he was led astray because he married foreign women. He didn't stop being Ahuv Lelohav. He was complicated. And that's what Nehemiah is telling you, is that he was great, but he made serious errors because he had these temptations that he couldn't overcome. And Chazal are writing the story to tell you that. So that sort of brings us, I think, to the end of Shlomo, where, as the Gemara leaves it, an open question. He does amazing things. He becomes the prototype for Mashiach. On the other hand, he makes grave, grave errors. He gets caught up in desire and drinking and women and foreign idolatrous cultures and all of that. But he still builds the Beit HaMikdash, and he still creates Yerushalayim as a center for God in this world. And he writes Shir HaShirim, and he writes Mishlei, and he writes Kohelet. And he still has wisdom. And he, even in Kohelet, might reflect on his mistakes and teach people not to do what he did. But that's the question the Gemara wants to leave you with, is does Shlomo ever fully do tshuva or not? Does he come back? Was this a temporary blip or not? We'll never really know. We know that it was too late to save the kingdom, but on a personal level, we don't know if Shlomo, at the end of his life, was contrite for it. The Torah doesn't tell us. So that is, I think, a good summary of the first 11 prakim of Malachim, the story of Shlomo. Which also, it's also cool. It's like these Agadata reads. It's like forcing you to read totally, right, metaphorically. But, you know, what Ray David Foreman likes saying, the reason that Chazal write this way, or the Torah writes cryptically, is because it forces you to think about it, right? Once things are written in riddles, it forces you to ask the questions, and sometimes it leaves things open and leaves you with possibilities as opposed to just telling you what they think. I happen to like, in this case, Rabinovich's addition to it, that Shlomo deserves to be told off in riddle form, in riddles. Okay, so that is Shlomo. Then, so next,